Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There's some sense to being patient. And, you know, when you have multiple options, it's like anyone who can step forward and be really productive, be a good solution. But when it doesn't happen, obviously at some point you have to start to shuffle a deck and make changes, working aggressively behind the scenes to try to make some changes. If we don't snap out of this, a lot of change is called for. That's obvious.
Welcome back on in, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. My name's Kevin Zipak. Here for another hour this morning, I will take you right up to Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. He is at Guaranteed Rate Field this afternoon. He will be broadcasting live from the south side of Chicago, taking you up to Cubs pregame at 12:40, I believe, this morning is when Cubs pregame gets started there for the final game between the Cubs and White Sox this year. It is Kyle Hendricks making his second start back from an injured list stint against Ivan Nova of the White Sox, one of those great offseason acquisitions for the White Sox. They had so many of them. Yes, Ivan Nova starting today for the Sox. On the way in there, you heard the voice of Theo Epstein. He was on the station this past week. He was on with Dan McNeil and Danny Parkins on the afternoon show. And as I said earlier, we're very lucky here at the station to be able to have access to Joe Maddon every week, periodically Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer, and they're often, more often than not, very forthcoming, very candid about where the team is at any given point and about what direction they'd like to head in the immediate future. And what I was thinking about a little bit before we took a break there at the bottom of the hour, and what I've kind of been pondering all morning long, is will the Cubs be a player at the trade deadline? And I'm not talking about some sort of, you know, move to kind of just solidify the depth or anything like that, although honestly they could use it. The Cubs don't have as much depth as they've had in recent years, some underachieving players to blame for that, and some players who maybe this organization had higher aspirations for, you know, players that we've mentioned already, like Albert Almora, Addison Russell, Kyle Schwarber, players who you might have thought in the future would have been more consistent. And those three, not to single anybody out or anything, but those three I think have been the most maligned this year in general. And they're ones that also come up in trade talks. But, as a caller brought up in the last hour, other teams can look around and see what Kyle Schwarber, Albert Almora, and Addison Russell are doing. I don't know why you would trade them now when their stock is so low, as opposed to, you know, waiting it out and maybe seeing if they can break out of it. Or, you know, we've seen Addison Russell, I think, at times be a Gold Glove infielder. We've seen him hit plenty of home runs before. We've seen Kyle Schwarber go on fantastic runs at the plate, and he's done a good job of making himself into a respectable outfielder. Albert Almora is great defensively in center field. He's as good as they come, but offensively, a lot is to be desired there. And when players like that don't pan out the way you thought, it does kind of reverberate throughout the rest of the roster and creates holes where maybe you expected not to see too many of them. So as the All-Star break does approach here and the Cubs sit at first place in the National League Central at 47 and 42. The question I've been asking this morning is, what can this team do to not only be a team that competes for the division this year in 2019, but sets their sights a little bit higher and can compete for a National League pennant, or failing that, a World Series? Well, not failing that. You have to do one first before you do the other, of course. 312-644-6767. John has been waiting in Rolling Meadows quite patiently. Morning, John. What's going on? Hello, John. Are you there? Waiting on John a little bit there. Maybe we'll get back to him quite shortly here. But back to last night's game for a little bit. If you're just tuning in and you missed what happened last night, the Cubs did defeat the White Sox by a score of 6-3. Lucas Giolito once again struggling against his I guess, his nemesis now in the Chicago Cubs when you look at what he's done against everybody else and what he's done against the Northsiders this year, a 2.26 ERA against the rest of Major League Baseball and a 12.96 ERA against the Cubs. John, I think, is all set now in Rolling Meadows, so we'll get out to him. Good morning, John. Thank you very much for waiting patiently. What's going on?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. What's up?
You know, I've heard a lot of people suggest Merrifield or Doolittle, but you know, Washington's six games out. They're not going to give up Doolittle at this point, I don't think. They're not looking to trade one of their lefties like that. As far as Merrifield goes, I think the Cubs are looking to maybe pick up like a second-tier player that they have that they can use off the bench in different positions and in pinch-hitting positions because their bench is too thin. They don't have anybody that can come up in the eighth inning and just slap a single somewhere to get an inning going or drive in a run with a base hit down the line. You know, they need if they need a lefty, they're going to have to give up something a little more special because lefties are at a very high commodity. And teams that have a decent lefty aren't going to give them up for a song and dance. So you might have to dip into the minors for something like that. Cubs don't want to do that.
Yeah, absolutely not. And I appreciate the call, John. Thank you for checking in from Rolling Meadows. You know, Daniel Descalso was probably supposed to be that guy, you know, that pinch hitter that you could bring in late into a game to work a good at-bat, to maybe try to get something going late into a game, like you said, slap one the opposite way and just try to get on base late into a game and make something happen. He was probably supposed to be that guy. And ostensibly he was the replacement for Tommy La Stella. You know, they're both kind of utility infielders, both left-handed hitters, both pinch hit specialists, I guess you could say, bench guys, depth guys. And they traded away La Stella. They signed Descalso to replace him and take up that role on the team. Clearly that has been a misfire. Descalso has been really bad after a pretty decent April to start off the season. He's been pretty putrid since then. I believe he is still hitting under 200 as we sit here right now on the 7th. So that was a misfire, a misevaluation from Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer there to swap out La Stella for Descalso. And I think, you know, even a little move like that where, you know, even though it's not a guy that's going to be playing every day, it's not Bryant or Rizzo or Contreras or Baez, you know, one of your core four, which is, I guess, the new name that we're putting on those four players, the untouchable core four of the Cubs. Even though a guy like Descalso is not, you know, one of the most vital players, a move like that does kind of affect the rest of the roster when you don't have that guy to go to. And he's hitting 186. Thank you for putting that up there, Mike. That's not very good. And when you have a player underperforming the way he is, that does kind of hurt your ability to get, you know, the kind of depth that you've seen from the Cubs over the past few years when they've been able to kind of move cogs in and out seamlessly throughout their lineup. 312-644-6767. Greg in Winnetka, Illinois this morning, a little bit north of us. Morning, Greg. What's going on?
Good morning. As a White Sox fan, first I want to comment on Theo's statement. I just don't think that you can really throw around threats on baseball. Baseball is not a game that you can motivate somebody that way. It's a game that you're going to need to probably do a lot of reinforcement as far as confidence go. But as far as the White Sox, I just really believe that they put their eggs into one basket trying to get Manny Machado. Whereas, you know, I heard Rick Hahn this week said that, you know, they have a real deficiency in right field. They have a pitching deficiency. Also, they had probably a second baseman deficiency. Those things could have been Brandy was out there. Morton was out there. Even though I know they're saying that their window is opening next year, those players could have been signed for 3 years. This summer, this offseason, you're going to have to go out there and you probably could have got it for $80 million for both of those players. This summer, you're going to have to go out there and spend. And Cole's going to cost you some money. Wheeler starting pitching is going to cost you some money. So you're going to spend more than if you would have been more preemptive and probably wouldn't got those two players right there, and you would have had you a nice starting pitcher. Well, both of these people are all-stars this year. Instead of putting your eggs into one basket and you're going to get a brother-in-law, you're going to get a best friend. And, you know, yes, we got a catcher that, thank God, he's turned out to be a very good player this year. But and we got a starting pitcher who we traded for. But it's nothing to push that. It's nothing to push it as far as saying, okay, next year these people could be a part of it other than McCann. McCann's just a revelation. But he didn't do anything to me to push it to the point where, hey, you know what, we got this in place, these veterans in place, and we got people coming up here. So they're still going to have a problem with pitching next year, and they're still going to have a problem with right field next year. They're going to have a center fielder, which is Louis Robert, but they're still going to have another problem. So I just want to get your opinion on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for checking in, Greg, up in Winnetka, Illinois. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you have to give Rick Hahn a lot of credit for acquiring James McCann. I don't know when they decided to sign him. They thought he would be what he's become, and an American League All-Star, and having the best year of his career by quite some distance. I mean, he was essentially just a guy, kind of a backup in Detroit, and he played there for quite some time. You know, it's not like he is a player that's new to the league or anything like that. He's been around, and I think people kind of thought they knew what he was, and I don't think he was brought in here to play every day and blossom into an All-Star level player. But you do give them credit for identifying McCann and signing him in the offseason. But then you look at some of the other moves that the Sox made in the offseason, Greg, kind of more to your point, they totally missed on Irvin Santana. That was an awful free agent signing, and he was jettisoned, I think, after just a couple starts. Ivan Nova has been a bust as a starting pitcher that they acquired in a trade. Ronaldo Lopez has regressed a ton this year. You know, you have to keep trotting him out there. That's part of a rebuild, is kind of just wearing it sometimes, even when you don't have your best stuff. And hopefully for Lopez, he's just going through a little bit of a growing pain in his career right now, and he can kind of get back to what we saw him at certain points last year. But, you know, going forward, as good as the foundation looks now for the White Sox with Moncada and Anderson, Jimenez, and then, of course, you've got Louis Robert and Nick Madrigal hopefully going to arrive next season. Dylan Cease made his first start. In terms of the starting pitching, Kopech will be back next year as well to complement Giolito. But the foundation is very good, and I'm very optimistic as a White Sox fan with what they're doing at certain positions on the field. But when you look at, you know, some of the history of the Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams hybrid, whoever's really making the decisions and evaluating talent and bringing guys in, whoever's really behind it, and I'm sure similar to most organizations, it is a collective and a brain trust style collaboration. But look at some of the moves that they made this offseason. I mentioned Nova and Santana as busts. How about Yonder Alonso, who was already designated for assignment? John Jay is fine, but he is essentially just a guy. He's not going to be here long term or really going to provide enough value for you to even flip him. So, you know, there are big problems in terms of major league talent evaluation. I think they've done pretty good with bringing guys up through the system and kind of developing them through the minor leagues when you look at guys like Moncada and Jimenez, amongst others. But, you know, the caller brought up a good point. I believe it was Greg. You know, why didn't you go out and sign Charlie Morton? He was a free agent before this year. That would have been a hell of a lot of a better of a signing than Ivan Nova or Irvin Santana. Yeah, Michael Brantley was available this offseason as well. That would have only cost you 2 years, $32 million. And sure, this is why Houston is where they are, and this is why Tampa Bay is where they are, because they go out and they identify and they're able to sign players like Michael Brantley, like Charlie Morton. There's a reason that well-run organizations are good pretty much every year. Tampa Bay is very good again this year. They were good last year. We all know how good Houston is. They're a juggernaut in the American League. This is kind of the difference between the White Sox and top-class organizations. Let's get to Matt River North very quickly before we take a timeout here. Good morning, Matt. What's up?
Hey, good morning. I have two questions. One, Cubs bring up Robel Garcia. To me, when you bring up a guy, you got to play him, right? So I'm hoping he gets to play to see what he can do. Same with, like, the White Sox with Zach Collins, because they're not using him that much, and he's dreadful right now. So if you're not going to get him at bats, like, he looked completely overmatched against Kimbrel, you know, like Little League. You know, he just couldn't touch the ball. But I don't blame the guy. He's 1-for-20 with 10 strikeouts. He doesn't play very much. What's the point of bringing him up then? Just have him sit the bench?
Yeah, I agree with you, Matt. Thank you for the call. Thank you for checking in. I can't really put much logic behind that one either, why they would bring up Zach Collins and have him sit on the bench as often as he does. You know, I don't think he's going to catch a ton, even at the major league level here, but there's no reason he can't DH or play a little first base. He was playing a lot of first base down in the minors, as a matter of fact, before they brought him up. So I do agree with you there. You know, how is a guy supposed to get consistency and get better at bats if he's playing, you know, once every other week? But I digress. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. A lot more Cubs and White Sox talk before I get out of here at 9. But up next, going to bring in 670 The Score's Bulls beat man Cody Westerlund. We're going to talk about the madness that has been going on in the NBA and where it leaves both the Lakers and the Clippers, and of course where it leaves the Bulls now in the Eastern Conference, as they somehow, according to reports, may have a chance. And this is mostly speculation now. Let me reiterate that. It's mostly speculation, but there is a chance that Russell Westbrook could be available from the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Bulls certainly have assets in terms of draft picks, in terms of young, tantalizing players. Is this the right time for the Bulls to strike while the iron's hot and acquire a superstar via trade if Russell Westbrook is indeed available from the Thunder? We'll ask Cody Westerlund that and many more questions coming right up after a timeout. My name is Kevin Zipak. I am here until 9 o'clock. I'll take you right up to Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel this morning on 6.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
70 The Score.
A lot of people up here don't know much about you. How would you describe yourself, and what would you like people to know about you?
I'm a fun guy. Obviously, I love the game of basketball. I mean, it's just more questions you have to ask me in order for me to tell you about myself. I just can't give you a whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at.
Welcome back on into 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. On the way in there, you heard the now famous laugh, famous cackle of Kawhi Leonard, the two-time NBA Finals MVP, Kawhi Leonard, who will be joining the Los Angeles Clippers alongside fellow superstar Paul George to form the newest super team in the NBA. Because that is the era in which we are living now, is you have to have at least one superstar if you want to compete in the NBA. The Clippers now have two. They have Kawhi Leonard, and they're also moving for Paul George. Where that leaves the Western Conference, I really have no clue. Are the Clippers the best team in the West? Are the Lakers the best team in the West right now with LeBron and Anthony Davis? If LeBron can stay healthy, certainly they are going to be right up there. And you've still got returning teams like Denver and Portland as well, who have young enough foundations that were successful enough last year that you could expect them to continue to ascend. So the Western Conference right now is completely wide open in the NBA. And with the Paul George trade moving from Oklahoma City to the Los Angeles Clippers, that leaves one Russell Westbrook is kind of a little bit in limbo right now. And the question that I have been wondering, and this is something I've seen on Twitter a lot as well, is should the Bulls make a move now to get a superstar, one that has been eluding them for quite some time? You know, since the trade of Jimmy Butler, the Bulls haven't really had a superstar here. And would it be the right time now to make a move for that? Let's go to the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Sorry, I had to move my head a little bit sideways there to read the copy. There we find 670 The Score's own Cody Westerlund. He covers the Bulls for 670thescore.com. And good morning, Cody. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing, Z-Pack?
Doing great, man. Appreciate you getting up today. Let's start off where I started in this segment here, talking about Kawhi Leonard and his move to the Los Angeles Clippers. Couple of questions here, two-parted question, if you will. One, did you expect him to end up with the Clips? And two, does this make them the best team in the West?
I didn't know where he's going to end up. I don't think anyone in the NBA really did. It was obviously a surprise with Paul George going to the Clippers. They've long been on Kawhi's radar. As he's from the Los Angeles area, they recruited him harder than anyone throughout the year-long process before, just by way of showing up at games and showing their face, even if they couldn't recruit him verbally in person every game and every day. But I found it a little odd just because all the speculation had pointed to the Lakers. And because if he wasn't going to pick the Lakers, we knew that championships meant a lot to him. And he won one in San Antonio, just won one in Toronto. Toronto had done everything. So I don't think any of the three choices were going to be a shock, but kind of where the signs pointed at the end, it was a little bit surprising. But that just goes to show you, I mean, he's his own individual. He's a very unique cat in the sense that no one could get a read on him. Almost every other free agent, news and information leaks out across the NBA, but with Kawhi Leonard, it was a little bit of a surprise at the end, just how it all went down, and no one saw the recruitment of Paul George really coming, which is what put it over the top.
So where does this put the Clippers then in the Western Conference? I mean, obviously Golden State is very unlikely to be back in the finals again. You're going to have a full season of LeBron, maybe if he stays healthy with Anthony Davis, and you've still got up-and-coming teams like Denver as well. Where does this leave the Clippers in now what is a wide-open NBA West?
I like them. I think they're the best team in the West. The NBA right now is about two-way play on the wings, and they have two of the best at that in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. They've got that Patrick Beverley. That's going to be a monster defensive backcourt. I mean, they can use Kawhi Leonard. He can guard like the third-best perimeter players at times in games until like the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter if he wants. You got to remember, like, Patrick Beverley loves guarding guys like Kevin Durant this past year. Like, that's a challenge he relishes. And then Paul George is an elite defender as well. He was in the Defensive Player of the Year running. So they don't even have to put the big responsibility and workload on Kawhi. So I like that. They'll need to add a little bit of depth, obviously. But they got Landry Shamet, who proved himself a young guy last year. They also have Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell still off the bench. Maybe Harrell slides in and starts, actually. I don't know at this point. But they're still deep enough that they have the star players and the depth, I think, to be the favorite right now. I think they're better than the Lakers. The Lakers kind of obviously got a lot of talent with LeBron and AD and Kyle Kuzma, but it seems a little top-heavy. Seems like their team hasn't been built as thoroughly, just adding guys in free agency more after LeBron, after they had to pivot. And it was the Anthony Davis trade, not getting Kawhi. So all the Jazz will be up there. You mentioned the Nuggets, of course, as well. The Rockets I still like quite a bit, but I'd put the Clippers as a favorite over all of them right now.
Cody, hang tight. We're going to try to reconnect on a different line here. Your phone's a little murky. Peoria Matt checks in on the text line, wondering if you're calling from Hallis Hall, which I don't believe he is. I think Cody's probably at home right now. But I want to clean up that line so we can hear a little bit more about what you have to say, including about the Bulls, because that's kind of the next thing I'm going to ask Cody about when we do get him reconnected here on a better line. The Russell Westbrook speculation now, and it will be rampant, you know, between him, is he going to stay in Oklahoma City? Or I don't really know what the Thunder's plan is right now. But let's get back out to Cody right now. What do you think the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to do now that they've moved Paul George? It looks like they're going to hit the pedal on a full rebuild. Do you expect that to happen? Do you expect Russell Westbrook to potentially be on the move now as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most likely outcome right now is them trading Westbrook somehow. The question is, I just don't know to who, because you got to realize when you got, I think it's 4 years and $170 million left on his contract, that's one that probably carries negative trade value. And if it's not negative trade value, it's certainly neutral trade value because he's had those knee injuries. He's on the back end of his career. And you got to remember, he's a point guard, and his game's predicated on athleticism, and that goes downhill fast when you've had injury issues. So he doesn't have a game that ages as well as some other players. So they'd have to find a perfect match and a perfect suitor, and I don't know, canvassing the NBA landscape, exactly who that is. So the Thunder might have to get creative. If they were to trade Westbrook, they might just be doing it to get off the money, not so much to get other assets, because I don't see a lot of those coming back to them in any trade for Westbrook at this point.
Yeah, he's definitely declined a little bit the past couple of years. He is 30 years old now, and for a guy who can't shoot, you know, his game is basically built around explosion and getting to the basket and his athleticism. It definitely a risky move for any team that would acquire him, but I saw a lot of speculation on Twitter yesterday, Cody, about Russell Westbrook and the Bulls potentially getting in on that and acquiring him. You know, the old tale is now in the NBA, you can't do anything unless you have a superstar, and then he attracts other superstars, and that's the only way you're going to get out of this NBA hell, so to speak. Do you think it would be a good idea for the Bulls to even inquire about potentially acquiring Russell Westbrook, or do you think they should stay away?
I think it would be idiotic to even inquire. Mm. Even if he was free for the Bulls, it would make no sense. And I'd go back to that contract again. Like, that would just hamstring you so much moving forward down the line at this point. And the other thing is, you mentioned the stars recruit stars, right? Like, right now we know that the Bulls, with some of these signings, I know they're three-year deals, but Casey Johnson has been reported that Satoransky, Thad Young's deals include some limited protection or limited guarantees in the third year. Like, they're going to have the ability to have cap space in 2021. Like, didn't Russell Westbrook just have Paul George and Kevin Durant leave? Like, if it's about recruiting stars, no one wants to play with him at this point in the NBA.
Right.
And you can say that Paul George and Westbrook had a good relationship. They were very complimentary of each other on social media in the last couple of days. But it still doesn't change the fact that if Paul George loved playing with Russell Westbrook, he would have just told Kawhi Leonard, no, I don't want to go to L.A. But he didn't love it enough, obviously, because he's a tough guy to play with. So I don't think he's attracting any stars down the line. So I don't think it makes sense from attracting superstar standpoint. I don't think it makes sense from a basketball standpoint or a financial standpoint.
So what else do you see going down with the Bulls now in this Eastern Conference in the upcoming season, first and foremost? Clearly, with Toronto losing Kawhi Leonard, they're not going to be the powerhouse they once were. The Nets were in the playoffs last year, but they're going to be a year away from being at their full strength when Kevin Durant makes his return with Kyrie Irving over there. So outside of Milwaukee, who was record-wise the best team in the East last season, how do you see the rest of the East kind of folding out? Do you think the Bulls kind of could kind of poke their head in there and maybe the seventh or eighth seed make a little noise toward the bottom of the conference?
I absolutely think the Bulls should be in the race for the eighth seed. I think it's a different animal to say they will get it, or that you got to like throw a party or have a fit, throw a party if they do or have a fit if they don't. But like, if this rolls around to March and they're not like a game or two back of the eighth seed, something's not going to plan, because that's why they added Thad Young. That's why they have Thomas Satoransky in here to start at point guard. That's why they got guys that they think are durable and can help Markkanen and Carter. And it kind of seems like the East is probably six playoff teams and then a couple spots open at the back end, and the Bulls will be competing with the likes of kind of the Hawks, probably up and coming for that spot as well. The Magic, the Pistons, team like Miami Heat with Jimmy Butler, they're in win-now mode. So there's going to be teams chasing it, obviously. It's not just going to be walking into it because everyone's rebuilding and tanking or anything. But, yeah, the Bulls should compete for that spot. 22 wins last year, that'd be a massive jump. It's usually around 41, 42 wins to get an eight seed. So that's a huge hill to climb. But, I mean, I think 10 of those games might be made up if they just stay healthy and if everyone on the team actually plays in March and April instead of shutting them down in the name of tanking. So that'll be incumbent on the guys they have. I think a full season of Otto Porter is a big deal in this sense, too, just because they haven't had that guy on the wing that's a professional, reliable veteran for a few years. Who understands and been in the playoffs and such. So they'll have a chance. They should be in the picture. I probably predict that they'd be just outside at the end. But, yeah, they should be in the chase for it. There's no doubt about that. And at the top, I think you mentioned the Bucks. I think it's kind of the Bucks and the Sixers at this point, after we kind of saw the Celtics undergo a retooling, not a rebuild, but a retooling there. They look a lot different, and they'll be relying on younger guys more. So Bucks and Sixers at the top. And, yeah, I don't see any reason why the Bulls can't make a run for the eighth seed.
Couple more minutes here with 670 The Score's Bulls reporter Cody Westerlund. And Cody, I'm going to name four players here from the Bulls roster, and I want you to tell me who is the most important player of this four. Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, Zach LaVine, and Kobe White. Who is the most important player of that core four of the Bulls right now?
No doubt, I think it's Lauri Markkanen. I think he has the highest ceiling, and I think when they played their best basketball last year in February, it was in large part because he was playing so well and at such a high level. The other guys, I think, we know what Zach LaVine is a little bit. He obviously, he needs to keep taking steps. I don't expect a great deal out of Kobe White in year one, just because the learning curve for rookie guards, rookie point guards, is so difficult. And the Bulls drafted him. They liked him, but they also knew it was going to take a little bit of time. With Wendell Carter Jr., obviously important, but look, they also added a lot of big man depth here in the offseason by drafting Daniel Gafford, by signing Luke Kornet, got Thad Young as well. So, like, there's just a little bit more of a built-in escape there, just kind of insurance behind him. Markkanen, though, that's their guy. They need someone to be a star. He's the one that needs to do it, so he needs to take that huge step. If he can form himself into an all-star, develop into one, that's a huge, huge deal for this Bulls rebuild, and I think he has the potential. I think he has the talent, but he's got to find the consistency every night, and he's got to fit in the system seamlessly that Jim Boylan has. So it's incumbent on him and the coaching staff to get that done, but I think Markkanen's definitely the most important player this year.
Cody, thanks a lot for your time, man. Appreciate it, and thank you again for getting up early with us here on a Sunday morning.
Yep, no problem. Thanks, Deepak.
That is Cody Westerlund. He covers the Bulls for 670thescore.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Cody Westerlund. And I thought it would be fun to have Cody on the show today to talk a little bit about Kawhi Leonard teaming up with Paul George over to the Los Angeles Clippers, forming another super team here in the NBA to go along with the one that's already in Los Angeles, the one that is in Brooklyn, which will be hampered a little bit by injuries here, the one that is frankly in starting to come together in Philadelphia as well. Even though they lost Jimmy Butler, they're still going to have Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, as well as Al Horford there. And where does this leave Russell Westbrook? Because again, this is just speculation. I haven't heard anything concrete, and Cody hasn't heard anything concrete about this, and he is vehemently against the idea apparently of what Russell Westbrook apparently being moved to the Bulls if they were able to do that. But I think it was very curious to see some of the speculation and some of the people on Twitter. It looked like it was a very divisive topic yesterday online of half the camp wanting to move everything you got to go get Russell Westbrook because stars don't come along very often. The Bulls aren't very good at bringing them here. And then the other camp, which kind of wants to hold steady and keep moving forward with Markkanen, with LaVine, with Carter, Kobe White now, the core that the Bulls have here. My name is Kevin Zipak. I'm here for another 20 minutes or so this morning. Going to take you right up to Matt Spiegel. He is at Guaranteed Rate Field this morning. That's where he will be broadcasting live from as we get ready for Cubs versus White Sox one more time in the 2019 season. Kyle Hendricks and Ivan Nova are today's starting pitchers. It is the final game of the first half of the Major League season. We are at the unofficial halfway point of the season. So the question, one of the many questions I kind of broached earlier in the program, is whether you're looking at it from a Cubs perspective and whether you're looking at it from a White Sox perspective. If I would have told you where these teams were at this time before the season, you would have probably taken it. You would have taken the Cubs being in first place. No question about it. In the National League Central, you would have taken the White Sox just being a few games under with the ascension of Yoan Moncada, Lucas Giolito, James McCann, and others. But now for the Cubs specifically, and Joe Maddon has talked about it, and Theo Epstein has talked about it, and they've had discussions with one another, bolstering this team so they can make a deep playoff run, not just win the National League Central. That should be the least of their priorities this season. I shouldn't say least of their priorities, but it should be the first bar that they clear. I mean, it goes without saying that this team should win the division, but the aspirations should be much higher. 312-644-6767 is the phone number here. My name's Kevin Zipak. I got you for another 15 minutes or so this morning on 6.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
70 the score.
This gets Frazier, not pleased.
And this year he's an all-star as a shortstop.
Nelson Barkley between Frazier and Arrieta.
A little bit, especially with changeups, but you know, Frazier's not happy about it. He can come see me, and I'll put a dent in his skull.
Welcome back on into 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Some spiciness there from former Cub, former Baltimore Oriole, Jake Arrieta. Yesterday, as the Phillies were taking on the New York Mets, things got a little, like I said, a little spicy between Arrieta and Todd Frazier. And then after the game, Arrieta saying that if he's got a problem with it, if Todd Frazier has a problem with it, then he's going to put a dent in his head. Quite the threat there from the former Cub. And this morning, Ken Rosenthal reporting that Jake Arrieta has a bone spur in his elbow, but believes he can pitch through it and take care of it in the offseason. It's unclear whether recent performance or last night in particular changed that. That from Ken Rosenthal and also Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Jake Arrieta is not having a very good season, especially up to the standard that he holds himself to. And I'm sure what Philadelphia expected from him when they gave him that big contract. Which brings me back to the choice that the Cubs made before last season, which has been scrutinized probably 100,000 times at this point, in which they chose Yu Darvish over Jake Arrieta. And no fan was really happy with it then, and no fans are really that happy with it now, because Yu Darvish has certainly not lived up to his contract. But had the Cubs re-upped with Arrieta instead of signing Darvish, I think fans would have been just as unhappy with it, because neither one of these players right now are living up to their contracts. And I think if the Cubs could do it all over again, I think they would have probably gone the same way. Even though Yu Darvish's 2018 was pretty much a wash, I think going forward, when you consider that Arrieta might need elbow surgery, he's going to try to pitch through this bone spur, but you know, they've got him for, I think, one more season after this. It's curious to think whether the Cubs, if they could have a do-over, if they would make that Yu Darvish signing again, if they really think that he can get back to the guy that he was with Texas, with Los Angeles, even at his age, with all that mileage on his arm. It's something interesting to consider. If they had the same opportunity, would they do it over again? 312-644-6767 is the phone number here. The bottom of the hour, by the way, is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Single-game tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Reminder, once again, that Matt Spiegel will be broadcasting Hit and Run this morning from Guaranteed Rate Field down on the south side of Chicago. You can check out Spiegs starting at 9 o'clock when I get out of here this morning. And I'm not sure what Spiegs has on the program today, but I'm sure he's going to have several guests come over there throughout the course of the show, as he does every week. And you can also come out to the Shy Sox Bar and Grill near Gate 5. I believe that is where Spiegs will be broadcasting from to celebrate the Wintrust Crosstown Series. Matt Spiegel will be broadcasting Hit and Run live at 9 a.m. until Cubs pregame with Zach Zaidman at 12:35. That is brought to you by Wintrust, presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. And thank you for the information there, Michael. Steve Stone will be joining Matt Spiegel this morning live from the Shy Sox Bar and Grill near Gate 5 at Guaranteed Rate Field. That will be always intriguing to hear from Steve Stone. I know he obviously wasn't on the broadcast last night. It was A.J. Pierzynski, every Cub fan's favorite player. But you're going to be able to hear from Stoney last night. He checked in on Twitter with what he saw from Giolito last night, as he has struggled against the Cubs and no better guy to hear about pitching than Steve Stone, in my personal opinion. Let's get back out to the phone lines here. 312-644-6767 is the number if you need to check in before 9 o'clock, and I'm sure that you need to. Let's start with Bradley. He's downtown right now. Morning, Bradley. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk about the point you made about Arrieta versus Darvish. Obviously, everyone's talking about it forever. But to me, the biggest point is I loved watching Arrieta. My wife and I love watching Arrieta on the TV. And just him not being there, she asked me yesterday, hey, where's the guy with the beard? So it's regardless of what they could do in the future, I think they should have kept him because fans just, they love tuning in to watch him, even though he might not have been as good.
Yeah, I get that, and I appreciate the call. I mean, Arrieta, for what he did, I mean, the stretch of dominance that he showed in 2015 was unlike anything I've ever seen. You know, comparing him to Bob Gibson, who was, you know, one of the best to ever do it, and that was the kind of run that Arrieta had there in 2015, and then also coming through big in the 2016 postseason as well. I mean, he's always going to be a hero and a legend here in Chicago amongst Cub fans. And I think that had he stayed here, yeah, maybe he would get a little bit more leeway. You like to think that maybe a guy like that who accomplished so much with this team and was so good for them might get a little bit of leeway even as his performance starts to decline a little bit. And I would like to think that, but then I also look at some of the scrutiny that Cub fans have put on Chris Bryant this year. Of all people, to single out Chris Bryant as, oh, he doesn't come up enough in the clutch, and oh, he only hits home runs in garbage time, and he stinks at third base, and all of these other things. He hasn't been the same since he got beaned in Colorado. I hear so much criticism of Chris Bryant. It's like, are we even watching the same games here? I mean, Chris Bryant is, again, one of the best players, not only in the National League, but in the entire entity of Major League Baseball. And he is, by the way, leading the Cubs in pretty much every offensive category. I mean, he's behind Baez, Contreras, and Rizzo in home runs, but he's still up there with 27. I mean, his weighted runs created is 148. That leads the team. His on-base percentage of 402, that leads the team as well. And he is leading all Cubs hitters right now in wins above replacement. So if you're looking to complain about anybody on the Cubs, you are more than entitled to, by the way. You have the right to criticize this team because I do think they have underachieved as a whole so far this year. But if you're going to criticize Chris Bryant, you know, I think maybe you need to focus your attention on somebody else who actually does deserve a little bit of more of a critical eye this year, because Chris Bryant is back to where he was in 2016, in 2017. He's back to being one of the best players in Major League Baseball. Once again, reminder to come out today to the Shy Sox Bar and Grill near Gate 5 to celebrate the Wintrust Crosstown Series. Matt Spiegel will be broadcasting Hit and Run live at 9 a.m. until Cubs pregame with Zach Zaidman at 12:35. Brought to you by Wintrust, presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. That music, there it is right there. That music means that my time is up for this week. Thank you to everybody who called, texted, tweeted, and listened. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with me, and I appreciate that. Thank you to Mike Chen, my dutiful producer over there in the studio. I can't see you, Mike, but I'm sure you're doing a great job. Thank you to Cody Westerlund, who joined me to talk a little Bulls and a little NBA this morning. And a reminder that, yes, Spiegel will be broadcasting Hit and Run next from 9 up until 12:35. That's when you got Cubs pregame, Kyle Hendricks versus Ivan Nova. Stay tuned for Hit and Run. Stay tuned for the Cubs game and enjoy the All-Star break. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. My name's Kevin Zipak. I will talk to you all again very shortly.
I know it's over.
Well, bye.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.